Okay, we'll begin with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher bachar banu mikol hamim V'natan lanu et torato Baruch atah Adonai Notein haTorah. Amen. This week we are in Parsha Matot. Though the truth is, I'd like to take the opportunity to focus on this time period, which is called the 3 weeks. It is initiated with the fast of the 17th of Tammuz and will conclude with Tisha B'Av. And those dates, just for those who might want English dates to coincide with that, the fast of Tammuz was on Tuesday. It's the 17th of Tammuz. And Tisha B'Av, which is the 9th of Av and commemorates the destruction of both temples, as well as myriad other calamities for the Jewish people, including the expulsion of the Jews from Spain, the expulsion of the Jews from France, the expulsion of the Jews from Portugal, the expulsion of the Jews from Italy, the expulsion of Jews from every kind of place. People always, they always happen to pick that date. So it's always the 9th or 10th of Av. This year, it falls on the 5th of August. However, as we know, the Jewish calendar doesn't always coincide with the English calendar. This year, though, the fast, and this fast is a full-day fast, unlike this fast that was on Tuesday, was just a sun-up till Havdalah time. The fast of Tisha B'Av starts the night before and is concluded at Havdalah time. Since we won't be meeting then, since my grandchildren will, God willing, be here, I also wanted to take the opportunity to talk about the entire 3 weeks. Even though, just as a point of housekeeping, we will meet next week, the 24th. After the 24th, we will be off until the 21st of August. So we'll be off for a long time while I'm playing with my grandchildren. So that's what I wanted to share with you. Yes?
It's not a commercial, but for those of you who want to learn more, there is a Tisha B'Av program that's from the Chofetz Chaim Foundation, and it's going to be shown several places around town.
Amazing.
Among them, Eidos, I think.
Eidos, usually Jewish Experience is going to have it also. I highly, highly recommend the Tisha B'Av video, and it first of all is a good way to pass the time while you're fasting because you are in this gripping video, and it's informative, interesting, enlightening, inspiring, the whole thing. So I highly recommend it. I will send out information to everybody about it when we get the information. Lynn, if you have that already, if you want to forward that to me, I can send it.
Yesterday.
Great.
I'm doing it at lunchtime.
Oh, that's a very good time. Okay. The name of it's the Chofetz Chaim. They put out a video every year, but through the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation, and this is shown worldwide, which is also an amazing thing because you know that you're united with Jewish people around the entire world who are watching this on the same day at the same time. So it's really, and they show then as part of the video. It's often not interesting watching credits, but on this video, they show all of the different places where the movie is being shown so that you really feel a sense of unity and camaraderie with all the Jewish people observing this day. So thank you.
And there's also a kids' version.
Oh, there is. Oh, amazing. That's. I think that sounds like a first time. I don't remember.
I don't know, but it's supposed to be like a story instead of a talk.
Okay, great. Okay, so kids' version as well. I'll send the information all out from you after I get it from Lynn. So that'll be great. Thank you. Okay. So as you know, since we last met, just in 2 weeks, how things can happen and everything that is going on in Israel. So I can, you know, really just share with you our personal situation. My one nephew was called up. All three of my nephews were tank drivers in the IDF. They were part of the Hezder program. For those people who think Orthodox people don't fight in the army, it's not true. That's yeshiva learning and army service combined, and they were tank drivers, all three of them. One of the tank drivers has been appointed as the rabbi, a rav, of an army base of 3,000 people, so he's stationed there. The other one was not yet trained on the most advanced tank, so he has not been called up yet. And the other one, the third one, Baruch Yair, whose wife I just spoke to this morning, because they're all pretty freaked out. He's a father. He's, you know, 29 years old, three little kids, and he's on the border of Gaza waiting to find out if there's going to be ground invasion or not. So he's a tank driver of the most advanced Israeli tank that they have. So that's what's happening. Our kids have been in with missiles going off, and they've been in having to run to the bomb shelters 5 times over the past, you know, couple of days. And they have 90 seconds, which is great compared to Sderot, where they only have 15 seconds. So they have 90 seconds to run to the bomb shelter. One of them included my 6.5-year-old grandson, who had to be whisked out of the bathtub. And luckily, he was so freaked out, but they did get a towel on him before he walked outside to run to the bomb shelter, so he wasn't stark naked, because he's also very modest. So if he would have found himself naked in a room full of people, he would not have been so happy. So they got a towel on him and whisked him away. And it's not just the time in the shelters, like the aftermath of all of this and the anxiety that this produces for everybody. So my 6.5-year-old, he's dealing with it by wanting to know about the Israeli fighter jets. He wants to know about mechanics. I want to see a plane. Daddy, take me to the airport where they have the fighter plane. So he's doing an intellectual, I want to understand this. The little girl, 4.5, just wants to be glued to her mother and sleep with her. So nobody's getting any sleep because she kicks while she sleeps. Okay, so that's not working so well. And the 2.5-year-old knows something's up and that he needs to be ready, so he insists on sleeping with his shoes on, which is interesting because he plays in the sand, you know, during the day. So it's like the house is a mess, the kids aren't sleeping. So it's not just the terrorizing of the bombing. It is just the whole thing and just the anxiety it creates.
How is anyone getting their shelter?
Their shelter, you can get there in 90 seconds if you run.
So is it in their own home or in their
No, it's not in their home. It's not in their building. It is outside their building, down the steps and around the corner and down another flight of steps. But you can get there if you run fast in 90 seconds.
That means you have to come.
You have to be home, and they also have instructions on what to do if they're not home. The schools have prepared them, and the 6.5-year-old said, what do I do if I'm on my way to school and the siren goes off, and I'm not at home and I'm not at school? So he said, just follow the other mommies and daddies. Everyone will be running, and you follow in the direction they go. Where they go, you should go.
Right. I just got back, and one of the scariest things is to be in transport.
Right.
Because the only thing you can do is stop your car and do a duck and cover.
Yeah.
Next to, away from the car so you don't
right.
get the glass shattering from the
right. So it's,
I mean, it's like really.
And the other thing,
the sights
is terrible. And the, you know, the other thing is the sirens can be heard very far away, and the kids, they can also hear, thank God, they can hear the Iron Dome. They can hear the boom of the rockets being, the incoming rockets being blown up. So in a way, that's the company goes, I heard another boom, you know. So it's just like, it's a weird psychology of what goes on. I don't know. I do not know.
So is anyone getting to work?
Yes. Everybody's just carrying on. They're going to school, they're going to camp, they're going to work, they're going shopping. They just can't gather in very large crowds, but everybody is just carrying on because that's what. No, there was a drone that came in that was shot down, but it was shot down. Naomi, and then we're going to do our lesson.
Yeah. You explain why they lie flat. If there's shrapnel, if you go as low as to the ground, you won't get hit by shrapnel.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Because when the bombs explode, they send out shrapnel, and if you're as low to the ground, it will.
Then you can be duck underneath it. I see. So you become as low as possible. Thank you.
Can
yes.
I share a positive thing?
Sure.
There is a young man from Denver who joined the IDF almost 3 years ago, Special Forces, and he was driving a Jeep or something of that size, and it was hit by one of these super things that could take out a tank, and somehow he and his passenger stayed in the car. The Jeep did not roll. It just landed. And he had a mild concussion.
Wow.
And, you know, Rabbi Meyer said, according to, you know, what he knew, this was a true miracle.
That is a true miracle.
These two.
So the rocket did not explode?
It did not, or it exploded, but it didn't cause any damage to them. I think it destroyed the Jeep or whatever they were.
But not them. So that brings us, thank you very much, the miracles. And there have been amazing miracles. They're in Ashdod, apartments, two high-rise building, two high-rises next to each other with a small parking lot in the middle between them. The rocket landed in the parking lot, didn't hit the apartments. So there's been things that things have hit, but the people were out of the room at the time, or just amazing, like at the Gulf, the first Gulf War, when there were all the miracles, when the Scuds were flying and not hurting anybody. So it's a little easy to get complacent and think, oh, well, we're not really in danger because, quote, nobody's getting hurt. But it's miracle, miracle, miracle. Mm-hmm. So my sister, who lives in Israel, said there is a phrase that we are using that people, that we want to activate, that's called Tehillim Neged Tehillim, which means Tehillim, which are psalms, neged against Tehillim. Tehillim are missiles. So our Tehillim against their missiles. That it doesn't seem like that should be the approach, but that our approach, along with the IDF and along with what we can do physically, is what we do at the spiritual realm. And the spiritual realm is reciting psalms. So if anyone wants to know, especially Psalm 121, if you want to include that, incorporate that, they're asking people to have a barrage of missiles. I talked to my niece today, whose husband is in the tanks, and said, we're davening for you, we're saying Tehillim, and she just says, thank you so much, we just need everybody's support. So I'm here to share that as well, to pass that on. Patricia.
So was it Psalm 20 that we're supposed to say for Tammuz?
For Tammuz, and Psalm 121 happens to be this, one of the psalms too, for protection for the for the
Psalm
Jewish
20, actually, I read it, and
it also applies
to the situation.
The truth is any and all psalms, but they're saying Psalm 121. There's a series, like four different psalms. I forgot the other ones, but Psalm 121, sometimes telling people too much is overwhelming. So Psalm 121 is one to add if you're not already doing Psalm 20, which is great for Thomas. But that's where we're at. So, yes, Beth Ann.
There's argumentation that I just joined and I can send it on to you. If anybody else wants to do it, I'll give you a specific soldier's name.
Great.
You can keep him in davening and he can be like mine.
My soldier.
Right.
It's called Shmira,
yes.
Which means to guard. That we become the spiritual guardian of one of the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots for us to do and all of it is part of it. So I also want to tell you something else lovely. This just came to me. Bethann, you probably saw this. Some of the others may have also. And my daughter-in-law heard Rebbetzin Mizrahi speak last night live at the Great Synagogue in Jerusalem. This is a story that I wanted to share with you about a woman who worked as a resource room teacher in Israel. Says, I work as a resource room teacher with children who have learning disabilities. A few years ago, a young boy began taking lessons in my resource room. I could not figure out what had brought him to seek my help. He clearly had no difficulty with his lessons and did well on all his tests. Yet, time after time, he consistently came to my resource room for his lessons. I was determined to find his area of weakness, but as hard as I tried, I could not find any type of learning disability or difficulty. Finally, out of frustration, I took him aside and told him I could not continue giving him lessons. It was a waste of his time, and his parents had hard-earned money, and he clearly did not need any sort of remedial help. The boy turned to me and said, I'll tell you why I'm here, but I'm asking you not to tell anyone else. I have a friend with a learning disability. Our teacher told him that he needed remedial classes in the resource room. He was so embarrassed to be singled out as having to go to your classes. I told him that it was no big deal that I also had to take remedial classes. That's why I'm coming to you, so that my friend will not be embarrassed. The boy who came to my class so as not to embarrass his friend was Gilad Sha'ar, one of the three boys who was murdered. And he was 10 years old at the time. The Jewish people are amazing. These boys were very, very special neshamas. So I just wanted to share that with you. My daughter-in-law said it was amazing to hear this story firsthand last night at the Great Synagogue.
Is he the older one?
I don't remember.
He doesn't remember his mother's son.
I'm guessing he's one of the younger ones that her son would be looking over. I should look back and see. I forgot the ages of the boy. Doesn't it sound like that same type of person? Oh. Can you imagine? People didn't even like to be taken out of class for get a hearing test when I was growing up. That was embarrassing enough, you know, to go to a special class. Unbelievable. The Jewish people are amazing. And based on that, because we are so amazing, the bar for us is very high of what we are supposed to achieve. And during this time of the 3 weeks is when we talk about and focus on the ways in which we can bring redemption to the Jewish people as a counterpoint to how we are in this situation of exile and persecution and everything else that we are experiencing. If people can't get worked up about the destruction of the temple, you can just open the newspaper, go to CNN, go online, and see what the Jewish people are suffering from. So the question is, if we look at the destruction of the temple, which we look at as the cause of all of our problems, because it initiated the exile, we wouldn't be in Europe, we wouldn't have been in Spain, we wouldn't have been in Germany, we wouldn't have been in Poland, we wouldn't have been in the Ukraine, we wouldn't have been in Russia, we wouldn't have been in any of these places had we not been dispersed. So what dispersed us was the destruction of the temple. And we are taught, and we are told by all of our sages universally, that the destruction of the second temple was for one primary sin. Does anybody know what it was? Sinat chinam, baseless hatred. And that baseless hatred, so someone says, I don't hate them baselessly, I have a reason. So nobody thinks, no one ever says, I hate them for no reason, because that would be, we would consider ourselves idiots. So we always have a reason. It's considered baseless. Unless we're talking about a Saddam Hussein, then your hatred is not baseless. But our basic relationships with one another in our lives, hatred has no place. What's interesting, however, is to think about, seriously, that's why God would destroy the temple? So the question is, or I would say, we say that God allowed the temple to be destroyed because we did not merit it anymore, because the temple is the representation of the Jewish people being unified in their service of God and in their unity with one another. So what did Sinat Chinam says, what does that look like? What's the definition of that? It says, Lashon Hara, gossiping, slander of one another. That is the definition of Sinat Chinam, which means that God destroyed, let the temple be destroyed because of our Lashon Hara, of our gossip. And you think, aren't there worse sins that could happen? Aren't there worse things that people could do? And you could say, well, maybe there are and maybe there aren't. But we have to understand, what is it about Lashon Hara that makes it the worst? So that's what I want to talk about today. And this is based on a lesson by Rabbi Kessin, but it was done with the approbation of all of the great rabbis and sages of today. So he's not speaking as a lone ranger out there, either in content or in ramification. So the question is, why is Lashon Hara so horrible? In fact, we're told, what's the greatest mitzvah of all? Is study of Torah. Study of Torah is the greatest mitzvah of all because it tells us and teaches us how to do all of the mitzvot. If we don't know how, then we're not going to be able to do them. And what's the greatest sin? The greatest sin that has the greatest impact? Lashon Hara. It's like, I think there's some other sins I could think of. Can you think of anything else that seems a little bit worse than Lashon Hara? Murder? Kidnapping? Maiming? You don't think any of those things are worse than gossiping about someone? That means that anybody who's gossiped here is saying about themselves, I'm worse than a murderer, I'm worse than a thief, I'm worse than a kidnapper, I'm worse than the worst person. I don't think we could really say that.
It's character assassination, right?
It can be. Character assassination, we're killing someone else.
It's because, I guess you could say there's no damage control, and you are, when you're embarrassing them, you're murdering them in front of them, and they have to live with that.
Okay, not in front of them when you're not in front of them, because gossiping by definition is another person.
But what I'm saying is that you're murdering their character, you're murdering them, and they have to live with that because you can't take it back.
Okay, you can't take it back. So we can look at all the things of how the mechanism of Lashon Hara and of gossiping works. And what we want to understand today is a meta impact of what is going on here. We have an idea that we call the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. We also have a concept that's called the Satan, which is the opposing force or the tempter. All of these ideas are really kind of like the same angel, the same being, the same spiritual force that exists in this world. How does this work? I think I'm not alone that there are lots of times, lots of occasions when I feel tempted to do something that I shouldn't do. Is anybody else, I hope, is experiencing that same thing? Perhaps, maybe, many times during the day? It says, what is that force that tempts us to do the things that we shouldn't do, that we know are incorrect, or that we can be somehow find our rationalizations on why we should do it, but we really know that we shouldn't if push comes to shove. So that is called the Yetzer Hara, and that is comes from an angel, the tempter. That angel, the tempter, is the one that tries to get us to do the things that are wrong. And once we do the things that are wrong, this very same angel, this very same force, becomes what's called the prosecuting attorney. Says, ah, I got you to do it, and now I'm going to take you to the heavenly court and say, did you see what she did? And then if the court says yes, 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 and the case is made, and there is a verdict from the court, what's called the Beit Din Lamala, the heavenly court, the heavenly court says, and the verdict should be whatever it is. Who carries out the verdict? This very same angel. So it says we have all of this negativity. This angel of negativity is from the tempting to the prosecuting to the carrying out of the court's final verdict. It says, how does that work? So the question is, so we are going around about our lives and we are not necessarily doing everything that is correct. Does that mean that we are being prosecuted all of the time? So the question is possibly we are being prosecuted in the heavenly courts, but there is a mechanism. It says that God set up a heavenly mechanism. So what we're going to try to understand today is how the heavenly court works. It says, are we judged by God for our actions? And we might think, yes, we're judged by God. And the answer is, no, we're not. We're judged by a heavenly court. And the heavenly court has to follow the laws of justice. Just like we expect our courts here, they have to follow the laws of justice. But there's a little interesting, I won't call it a glitch, there's an interesting structural construct that God put into the heavenly court. The prosecutor, the prosecuting angel, can only bring charges against us, can only speak against us, if he has permission. And what gives him permission? It says, we open up the case, the file on the person. So let's say we open up the case on Ellen Hutt, and we look at her, and we say, has Ellen ever done anything where she has prosecuted other people, where she has spoken badly and brought other people's shortcomings to life? Well, if she has, then the prosecuting angel is free to bring prosecution against me. But what if my file is opened and it says she has never spoken any Lashon Hara? She doesn't gossip about anybody else. She never says anything negative, damaging information about another person. Then what happens? It says the prosecuting angel cannot bring prosecution for any of the other sins that I have committed. The stopgap, the thing that keeps the whole thing from proceeding, is the speaking of Lashon Hara. Because if we look at what Lashon Hara is, it is conveying negative information, true or even worse if it's untrue, true negative information about another person. We are in effect prosecuting them. We're saying, did you see they did blah, blah, blah? That's called a prosecution. Lynn?
Is there such a person who has never?
There is no person who has never. That being said, what we want to do is minimize to the greatest extent possible the amount of times that we are brought to heavenly court. In the same folder that we have, like our case file, are other things as well. What was that?
Permanent record.
On our permanent record, exactly. Our permanent record, which actually takes us back to when a person becomes 12 for a girl or 13 for a boy, their record is opened. And from 13 to 20, it's in pencil. It's a not permanent record. It's subject to change. Once a person hits 20, they are considered completely accountable for their actions. So that's, we have like a Jewish adolescence period from 13 to 20 or from 12 to 20. Yes?
I know that I have spoken Russian.
Join the crowd. Yes, I shouldn't cast aspersions. That was a negative thing. You and me. Wonderful.
That
Yes, so you can do teshuva on Lashon Hara by apologizing, and if you said it to other people, you have to call the person and tell the other, you have to tell everybody, and it depends how long you goes. If it spreads, then you can't. So it becomes a very difficult thing. I mean, even if you maim someone, God forbid, they can have surgery and go to the hospital and give them money for lost time at work. It's actually easier than Lashon Hara. So what we want to understand is how this mechanism works. So going back to our folder, in our folder also are other meritorious things that we've done. So that if we have done acts of chesed and acts of kindness, then when the prosecution comes to bring its case against us, then they open up, the court opens up and says, oh, but she did acts of kindness. That becomes a mitigating factor, just like in courts here, where the people speak and they thought, what are the mitigating factors about this person? If they've been just a complete disaster all the way through, then the court's not going to have so much sympathy. If the person also, you know, yes, they robbed the bank, but they also went into a burning building and saved an elderly grandmother or something. It's like, okay, this person has redeeming qualities. The merit of those actions tempers the result of the court, because that's considered legitimate to bring that into the discussion about what should happen to this person. So with that, though, is we don't really know how many merits we have in our file. Since we are not privy to that, we're not supposed to say, I have so many merits in my file that I'm sure that that'll take care of a good 5-10 hours of speaking Lashon Hara. So it's like, that alone is a sign of arrogance and goes into your record too. An arrogant person who thinks that their case is so wonderful that they don't have to rely on their merits. We have an example of Jacob, of Yaakov, when he is going to leave Haran and leave Laban, and he's going to encounter Esav. He says, I've become diminished from the many gifts, God, that you have given me. Meaning, I have received so much from you, God, already, my merits don't possibly add up to compensate for everything you've given me, which means I feel as if I have no merits whatsoever, which means I feel a little bit like I'm on shaky ground. Now, if Yaakov can feel that way, we certainly should, because it's not only our merits that are in our file, it's all the blessings we've received as well. Like, oh, well, I gave her good health, I gave her a family, I gave her a job, I gave her a home, I gave her a car, I gave her children, I gave her all these things. It's like, okay, you're going to start weighing all of those gifts that we didn't really deserve against, oh, here's all my merits. Like, it's never going to probably be enough. Since we're not supposed to rely on the merits that we have from other good things that we've done, that would be unwise. What we are supposed to rely on is working on the stopgap, the gate that has the most impact, which is our speaking of Lashon Hara. That refraining from that nullifies the ability of the prosecution to come forward and bring any case against us. Also listening to Lashon Hara. So let's say you don't speak, but you listen. So that means that the prosecutor has the ability to listen, that the court has the ability to listen to everything that we have done incorrectly. So whether we are the speakers or the listeners too, because we tend to sometimes give ourselves a pass saying, well, I didn't speak it, but I was listening, but I didn't really say anything or do anything to get out of it. It's like culpable, equally culpable. Perhaps the person who's speaking Lashon Hara has the worst habits that they have cultivated and they just speak. But who says that we have to be the receiver of it? So that we become equally culpable with that.
What if the person being spoken about is acting immorally and it needs to be talked about?
To whom? To whom? The question is to whom? Right. So when somebody's doing something wrong, then we are supposed to talk about it to the people who need to know. That's called litoelis, which means for a constructive purpose. Okay, so if somebody is, God forbid, being abused or molested or whatever, we don't say, oh, I can't say any Lashon Hara against this person. You go to authorities and you report them and you give a full account. But that doesn't mean that you go tell everybody. You don't need to necessarily do that. So there's still such a thing as maligning someone. We're supposed to treat, we're supposed to take, handle situations appropriately. Now, it may be like if you have a, you know, a sexual sexual predator, that a neighborhood needs to be alerted because they are all potential victims. So there's different situations. That's called lito ellis. So that's why we are supposed to study the laws of speech, because we need to know what kind of speech is okay, because sometimes it's essential to convey negative information. If two people are dating each other and you happen to know that he was an axe murderer from, you know, Afghanistan, then you need to speak up. You can say, oh, you know, I don't want to say anything negative. They look so happy together. That's so romantic. It's like, speak up. Or if two people are going into business together, you must speak up. If someone is considering a doctor for medical attention where their lives could be at stake, you also must speak up. You have to at least tell the person you should, you need to check into this person. I'm not positive, but you need to check into this person. And those are things where we are supposed to take action. But they're just kind of the garden variety conversations that we have that are not at that level. We are supposed to be extremely careful. Peggy.
Where do negative thoughts come in? Is that considered Lashon Hara?
It is not. Thank you. Negative thoughts are not. However, we are, as an aside, we're supposed to work on our thoughts, because it's really hard to have thoughts not come out into some sort of speech or action. They tend to. So we're supposed to work on negative thoughts. Negative thoughts are usually not having love for the other person. So the root of Lashon Hara speaking is not having the mitzvah of Be'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha, of loving your fellow person as yourself. So it is usually out of jealousy, ego, greed, all the things that are negative characteristics that lead us to have negative thoughts. But there are some, again, there are some negative thoughts that one should have. Like, we are supposed to have hatred for Hamas. We are supposed, that is a negative thought we're supposed to have, and we're supposed to take action accordingly. Legal action. But those are not like, oh no, I don't want to have any negative thoughts. So this is not, you know, we're not Buddhists. You know, this is not like, purge yourself of negativity. Some negativity is appropriate. It needs to be channeled in the right direction. But this is about just all of our relationships with one another.
That was my question, actually. What if you're helping somebody or trying to with a difficult situation?
That's therapeutic, and that's called lito ellis, and it means for a constructive purpose. But we have to be careful, because sometimes people say, I think this is for a constructive purpose. You should have seen what happened at the luncheon. You know, it's like, it's not constructive. That is destructive. Okay, so we kind of give ourselves, so it's a rationalization about when we can do this, which is why, and we are accountable. In this situation, ignorance is no excuse. We are told that the creation of the human being, that what differentiates us from animals, in spite of your brilliant pet, is that we speak. And that we have the power and gift of speech, and we are held accountable for that. Zahapa.
So, this really happened about a year ago, and it went to Beit Din, and a very strange story where the wife finds out that the husband is having an affair, not just with one person, but like he gave a list of 50 women from the first day of their marriage.
Wow.
She took him to Beit Din, and they had 5 children. It's just a very sad story. My question is, why the shul, the rabbi, his friends are not doing a putting him in chalem?
Why
everyone's
aren't?
Everyone's like acting like, you know, they see him, how are you, blah, 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 blah.
Not right.
So when someone says to his best friend, how come you're talking to him? Is that Lashon Hara?
Asking the question isn't Lashon Hara.
It is?
It is not.
It is not.
Asking the question.
Like, how could you be his friend after all that he has done?
Actually, I take that back. I don't know. That is a tricky thing, because your question is not a question, it's a statement. It's a statement with an inflection at the end, making it into a question. It's like, how could you do that? Means you shouldn't have done that. So.
But how could the rabbi even allow him in shul?
The rabbi, the people who are upset should speak to the rabbi. They should take appropriate action. We just have a hard time going to the who can help us, and we tend to divert our...
This person did not leave the membership that is at the JCC every day. He goes to everybody's...
I'm surprised he has any time, quite frankly.
Terrible.
I said, I'm surprised he has any time.
Yeah.
Diane.
It's a little, you know, negative thoughts are hard to live with.
They are hard to live with.
And we have negative thoughts about other people, and we're impacted.
Right.
And sometimes talking to our spouses relieves the pressure of the negative thoughts.
Okay.
Like, how does the spouse come
into the picture? So we are not allowed to speak Lashon Hara to our spouses either, except L'Toeles, for constructive purpose of blowing off steam, of release, of I need your input. But it's not supposed to be come home at the end of the day and tell your spouse every single negative thing. Because we think that helps. There is a misconception, and I was promulgated by psychological principles at earlier times, that are, if you let it out, it makes it go away. That's not true. Letting it out adds more fuel to it. Sometimes it is a negative thought of like, I need to deal with this thought myself, or I need to shrink it down as much as possible until it becomes benign, which can happen through generosity of spirit, putting something in a bigger context, trying to find extenuating circumstances, judging favorably. So not every negative thought does need to be expressed. It's not like a, God forbid, you know, it's not like a germ that must get out of my body, otherwise I'll get sicker. It's no, sometimes you just need to push it down because we tend to go in the other direction. Janice.
I've been trying to work on this for a few years. And my situation is that I have a close family member who's had one issue after another, health, among other things. And so when I get together with friends, they're like, how is so-and-so? You know, what's going on? They want the details. And I'm like, I've been trying to back off, but I've been very unsuccessful. I don't know how to
cut it off. Okay, sharing other people's health information unless they have asked is Lashon Hara. Okay, we're not supposed to, what to say is, you know, I really don't have anything to share with you. I really don't have any more information to share. Or I'm sure they would appreciate hearing from you. If you're so concerned, I'm sure they would appreciate hearing from you. They would welcome your phone call, they would welcome your card, or they would welcome something. Is to divert it into that. We also have like a want to know thing. And a lot of it is well-meaning. It is very well-meaning,
yes.
But it's not for us to share about other people, and that's considered, we don't know, unless you ask someone, may I share the health information about what's going on with you with other people who are concerned? And if they say, sure, the more people know about it, the better. I need all the help I can get. Other people will say, you know, I really wish you'd keep this private, because that people don't necessarily want everybody to know that. So all of these things about negative speech are things for us to really look at. Primarily going back to this idea is that it's the Lashon Hara that is the gate that allows all of our other shortcomings to come to the fore. Lynn.
So if you are the subject of Lashon Hara, is there an obligation or not to review? Or, you know, what, having been that, you know, is it my problem to solve? Is it my, you know, my place to say something?
It might be, depending on the situation. If you know for sure, you can raise something. Because the problem is, and this sounds really, 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 really super unfair, is when Lashon Hara is being spoken, there are three people who get called to the heavenly court. The speaker, the listener, and the subject of the Lashon Hara. And you think like, well, how unfair is that? The per person's already being talked about. You mean their record gets opened up on the heavenly court too? Everybody's record gets opened.
So if I didn't do anything about it, that would not be in my favor.
It depends on what it is. Some Lashon Hara is best, the best response. If there's nothing you can really do about it, sometimes you can't do anything about it. What people say, you cannot do anything, and the best thing is to proceed. Sometimes if you can squelch a rumor or squelch a something with factual information that will be believed, then it's a good idea to do that.
Or to stop it from happening again.
Yes.
But go directly to the source.
Go directly to the source and don't tell other people about it. Go to the source. The response is always go to the source. And information and words about other people is sacred. It's private property. And so we need to guard that. Patricia and then Valerie.
So back in Temple times.
Yes.
It was the Jewish community against each other.
Right.
It was Jew versus Jew.
Jew versus Jew. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So when we talk about baseless hatred and Lashon Hara, we're talking about Jew against Jew. Now, this is not a license to speak Lashon Hara about non-Jews. We're not talking about that. But we're talking about where is the problem the greatest and where are we first and most responsible is within our family. And our family means the Jewish people, and that's where there's the most damage done. So we have at the individual level, so what can happen? It says it unleashes negative forces on us as individuals, but then we have something going on too, which is the Jewish people collectively. So this we also need to address. Because the temple wasn't just destroyed for one person, that affected all Jewish people. All of us sitting here have been impacted by that. And every year, or every day that the temple is not rebuilt, it's not because like no one got around to it. It's because that means that the same sin is active today at this moment, and therefore the prosecution is ongoing against us, and the negativity is we're experiencing the fallout from it. So we want to have as much merit as possible, and the most merit for the Jewish people collectively is working on not speaking Lashon Hara. So the way this works is, and this is a little complex, I'm going to take two other comments, and then I want to explain this so that we can get to it before the end of our class.
I was just going to say that the Hope is Triumph Foundation, if you get onto their website, you can sign up for a listening gift.
Yes.
And it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. Yes, it's a great way to do it because you can't take in the whole book and you can't say, well, I'm a sensitive person, I'm a thoughtful person, I know the laws of Lashon Hara just intuitively. So we can't say that. Valerie, I apologize, yes.
My question was to what Lynn was saying, what if you don't know the source? What if you just know that people are...
Is out there?
How do you...
You carry on.
Like herding cats.
You carry on. You carry on and make sure that whatever's negative is being said about you, you convey by your actions that it's not true. That's all you can do. Is that okay? All right, you have more questions after we can answer. I want to talk about what happens at the cosmic level. This is pretty wild stuff, in my opinion. Everything that exists in this world, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's Hamas or the IDF, and I'm using that just as those are our symbols right now of good and evil right now. Everything that exists can only exist if it is the recipient of divine energy. Okay? If there's no divine energy flowing to it, it can't exist by definition because God is the creator of everything. There can only exist if there is divine energy that allows it to be here. From inanimate objects to animate to people of all stripes. It's like they're only here because there is energy that is allowing it to be here. So we're going to just use good and evil for right now. Hamas, IDF. How do they get this divine energy? How do negative forces get divine energy? It's like, well, there's a mechanism. And the mechanism was set up, so it's going back to Bereshit, is after the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, there was a curse against Adam, against people, but there was also a curse against the snake, against the Nachash. Now the Nachash happens to be the embodiment of the Yetzer Hara, of the evil inclination, because what its job was, that it did so well, was to tempt Eve into eating from the tree of knowledge, and then she went ahead and gave to Adam as well. And then it also becomes the prosecutor of, look what they did. And then the Nachash is going to be tied in with this good and evil. It says there will always be enmity between man and snake. So it's not just like the women don't like snakes except for a few who work at the butterfly pavilion or whatever it is. Okay? There's like an enmity between people and snakes. Because it is the representation of the Yetzer Hara, says that the God was going to kill the snake. If the snake was so bad, so get rid of it. Why not get rid of it? We see, it didn't get rid of it. Why is the Yetzer Hara alive and well? It says the God, if you can picture this, put in a tube of the way the divine energy, if you can picture it coming down through a tube into this world, and then it splits off into a Y. And one side of it goes to the side of good, and one side goes to the side of evil. And the divine energy, but it has a, it's called a seesaw relationship or an inverse relationship. It's never going to be equal. It will always be this way or that way. Either the positive will be prevailing or the negative will be prevailing. Either the Nachash and Hamas are getting the divine energy, or the Jewish people and the side of good are getting the divine energy, but not both. How do we know that it can't be both? So this goes to the, our narrative that we have about when Rebecca was pregnant with Jacob and Esau. When she's pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, and she says that they're struggling within her, not like your normal pregnancy with twins, which I wouldn't even know what that was, but not that normal discomfort. And she goes not to her OBGYN, she goes to with a prophet to find out what is going on inside of me. And the prophet tells her, gives her the word, the prophecy from God, there are two nations in you, and one will always, the younger will be over the older, and the might will pass from one to the next. It will never be shared, and it will never be that everyone gets, and it'll never be completely gone. It'll be a seesaw inverse relationship. And why Esau? Why do we bring that in? It says Esau is considered the person who is the embodiment of the Yetzer Hara also. That because, and his angel is called Satan. So when Jacob is fighting, wrestling with the angel, says, who is he wrestling with? He's wrestling with the angel of Esau, which is Satan. And it's not for nothing that Yaakov and Esau, Jacob and Esau, were twins. This is a relationship just like we have. Our Yetzer Hara and our Yetzer Tov, our good and evil inclination, are twins within us. We don't get to say, you leave the womb. Like, we're twins. We come into this world with both forces in us. The only question is going to be, is which part of us gets the most divine energy as individuals, as well as the collective Jewish people, the world. When the Jewish people are down in how we are behaving, the divine energy is given over to the other side. What allows that divine energy? What does it mean how the Jewish people are behaving? So yes, we could say, wouldn't it be wonderful if all the Jewish people were following all the mitzvot? Everyone was keeping everything. Everyone's saying, oh, that's not going to happen. And even if it did, there would still be shortcomings. But what's our stopgap measure? How would the heavenly court know if the Jewish people are doing what they're supposed to do or not? How are they going to hear about it? How's the word going to get to the court? Lashon Hara. When the Jewish people refrain from speaking Lashon Hara and are unified, that is what keeps our other shortcomings from coming to the attention of the heavenly court and keeps the divine flow of energy towards the side of the good. It works at the individual level and it works at the cosmic level. To the extent that we are bad-mouthing one another as a collective group of the Jewish people, that brings all of our shortcomings of the people who are speaking, who are so self-righteous, thinking that they're the ones who can pass judgment, the ones who are being spoken about, and the people who are listening, it brings the whole kit and caboodle up to heaven for heavenly judgment, and the flow of divine energy is like, okay, away from you all people, and over to the other side. That's considered the mechanism of how things work in this world. And that is the most valuable information that we could possibly have. People said, until a few weeks ago, people said, the Jewish people could never be unified. We saw that wasn't true. We saw with the kidnapping of the three boys, oh yes, they could. And in fact, it didn't even take that much. Not to downplay the lives of three people. But three people and three women basically unified the entire Jewish people. And for those 18 days, we didn't hear anything. It's like it was all, everyone was focused on what's the main point here. Without a focus, we tend to disintegrate and deteriorate. When we have a focus, we are able to hold it together. Those people don't have any fewer, during those 18 days, we didn't have any fewer arguments. It wasn't like everyone suddenly became angelic in their behavior, just that everybody kept a lid on it of what they were saying about one another. Because and people were talking about in Israel, the people were just acting more nicer to each other, more polite, more forgiving, more yielding, not trying to, since someone described it as, people weren't honking the horn immediately when the light turns from, there's its backwards, it goes yellow, it goes red, yellow, green, to let you know you can get ready to go, as opposed to then you need to get ready to stop. So it's like, when can I go? And people like lay on their horns. The people weren't doing that. It's like, did these people change their approach to driving all of a sudden? It's like, no, there was in the air was a different spirit. And we could saw a glimpse of this. And this is what we are trying to preserve. And it's amazing, beautiful, sad, wonderful, that is all occurring during this time. And again, people in Israel saying, it felt like the 3 weeks started a lot earlier. I felt like we were already in it, because this time period is when we have heightened awareness of what the responsibility and role is of the Jewish people to bring this divine flow of energy. It's not just to benefit us, it's to benefit all of humanity. We're not here for our own purposes. And that when we watch ourselves in not speaking Lashon Hara, that the amount of good that it does is beyond our comprehension. And even just the visual saying, no one can be brought to court. No one can press charges. There's an example that's also given from Tanakh. It says that when King Solomon fought battles, that he lost a lot, they lost a lot of battles. That there were people who died. And at the time when and he was a righteous person, when King Ahab fought battles, and he was a wicked person, Ahab and Jezebel, that should ring a bell, bad. They were victorious all the time. It's like, why? Why would that be? Why would God allow someone who is evil to be victorious? It says, the Jews at that time of King Ahab did not speak Lashon Hara. At the time of King Solomon, although they were wise in Torah, they spoke Lashon Hara against each other, and it made them lose the battles. We'd say, like, how does one thing have to do with the other? We talk about what's our Iron Dome, which prevents the missile from even coming close. Our Iron Dome is the shielding, the guarding of our speech. That is our Iron Dome. It's our Iron Dome for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, and for the entire world. And the Jewish people are the people who have this in our hands in the most extensive way that God has made, taken what was given to Adam at the time of Bereshit, the splitting of the divine energy into the Nachash, the snake, and to Adam, and having it be a seesaw relationship. You can just substitute the Jewish people for Adam. We're the ones who kind of picked up the gauntlet of what was initially given to Adam. And it's in our hands for the benefit of the whole world. So working on the laws of speech, and as Roberta said, you can go to the Hofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. You can sign up for a daily lesson, and it just gives you a daily little tip. It takes 10 seconds to read to find out a way of speech. There's also, it'll give you, there's a hotline. If you have a question about a situation and you're not sure if something is Lashon Hara or not, or you want to know how to handle it, they have operators are standing by. Operators are standing by to help, because this is so crucial. We are taught that in Egypt, if you remember the narrative when Moshe kills an Egyptian who is striking a Jewish person and kills him, buries him in the sand. And then later he comes out and two Jewish people are fighting each other. And we said it's Datan and Aviram, we're fighting with each other. And Moshe goes to intervene. And what do they say to Moshe? They say, oh, who made you judge over us? Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian? And then Moshe says, now I know, that now the matter is known. And he says, like, what's known? Was it, yes, it's known that I killed the Egyptian, but he says, there's a deeper answer, now it's known. He says, now I know why the Jewish people are suffering so exceedingly in Egypt. It's because they're speaking Lashon Hara. They're speaking negative, true things about one another. So yes, they were supposed to. It was in the prophecy that the Jewish people would be strangers in a strange land and would be oppressed. But nobody said that it had to be oppression at the level that it was. That was Moshe's question. Why is this oppression so harsh? He says, now I know why. is because they're speaking Lashon Hara. Susan?
Doesn't that let the Egyptians
up? You could say that our answer to Tisha B'Av lets the Babylonians, the Romans, and the everyone else off the hook. We see those people as they are accountable for their actions, but we always look at what's the root cause, and we see ourselves as the root cause. We're allowing the negative energy. We're involved. We're involved in it. So this is not a blame the victim. This is, however, that there is a cosmic scheme here of how this divine energy flow goes. Let me continue so that we can understand what happens. So when Moshe says this, that he understands now why the Jewish people have been so oppressed and why it has lasted so long, says that then the Midrash comes in to say that Hashem comes to plead with the Jewish people to say, stop speaking Lashon Hara so that I can hasten your redemption. You must stop on your own because the divine system is, if you speak Lashon Hara, then the divine energy goes in the other direction and you become guiltier. You're already at the 49th level of spiritual impurity. How come we were let out? How come we were let out at all? The angels already said, why are you saving them? They're idol worshippers and they're idol worshippers. But how does that idol worshipping fact become known in the heavenly court as a reason for us to be treated, to be mistreated? It says, only through the speaking of Lashon Hara of the Jewish people. The Lashon Hara stops, the redemption can begin. If we're told, and we are told, that the final redemption is going to follow in the exact same pattern, so that we're coming in like on the eve of the redemption, and if the cause of the harshness, and we have certainly experienced the Jewish people throughout this exile, I cannot think of, and I don't think it's just being provincial or anything else, the Jewish people have suffered so tremendously. Now you can say, yes, but we're also doing well and financially well. The Jewish people have suffered tremendously. How do we get it to stop? So Hashem is giving us the same message and saying, stop speaking Lashon Hara. Do you think it is a coincidence that the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation came into the world and has become such a force to educate us all in as many ways possible? You can have a book, you can have a CD, you can have a class, you can dial for help. There's every single possible way. You can get stickers for your house. There's no reason to be ignorant about the force of guarding our speech. That God is giving us the same message saying, stop speaking Lashon Hara. The whole name of Chofetz Chaim Foundation comes from the phrase in Tehillim, Mi ha'ish ha'chofetz chaim, who is the person who desires long life? And it's the person who has clean lips, and clean lips means no speaking Lashon Hara. So that's what we're supposed to work on. The time of working on it is all the time, but specifically during these 3 weeks. This time period is the intensive time when we are supposed to focus on it. And if someone has a doubt about whether they should say something or not, ask somebody for guidance. We don't, as we say, we're not supposed to paskin for ourselves, which means we don't make legal determinations for ourselves any more than we do our own lab work. You know, we go to, like, well, I looked at my skin, I thought it looked good. It's like, go to the dermatologist, go get an x-ray, go get a mammogram. We don't make those decisions for ourselves, and except in spiritually we say, oh, yeah, I'm sure that's fine. Okay? Or we say, oh, I'm sure it's not fine. We can make errors both ways, and they can be very, very damaging. So our goal during this 3 weeks and to work on between now and Tisha B'Av especially, culminating with the Chofetz Chaim Foundation video on Tisha B'Av itself, which will carry this message of not speaking Lashon Hara. Not saying and not sharing negative words and thoughts about other people actually diminishes the thoughts, especially if we look then to substitute positive thoughts. Again, this doesn't mean not addressing issues. If somebody is an abuser, you don't say, oh, but they take out the garbage also. I mean, we don't try to make it okay. We're not talking about smoothing away and putting under and whitewashing problems. We're not talking about that. We're talking about addressing real serious issues, but with the appropriate people and the appropriate way. And the rest of us, for all of our conversations, says when we, sometimes somebody says, oh, I have an hour, I have some time to kill. says, we usually do end up killing during with that time to kill. We end up having a conversation where we kill other people with our words, and except with the suicide mission as well, because we're killing ourselves and we're killing the person we're talking to. So it is a place, and all it does is activate and give more power to the negative. So along with the, in line with the Shmirah that Beth Ann was talking about, of praying for a particular soldier, of our Tehillim, of our Psalms, Neged Tehillim, our Tehillim against the missiles. That's, we understand that the hands of Esau, the hands of powers against us, can be negated through spiritual power as well. So we employ two forces, just like Jacob did when meeting Esau, that he was prepared to fight and he also prayed. So we take a dual action as well. As we pray, we do everything that is in our spiritual power. And all those time, instead of speaking Lashon Hara, you say to someone, you know, if you have a conversation, you can't get out of it, it's like, let's say a prayer, you know, or anything. How about those Broncos? How about those Rockies? You know, just change the subject. And don't be a listener either, because listening is as much of a sin as speaking. So with that, we hope that we can truly guard our gift of speech, that we can direct the flow of divine energy. Do you think about what happens when we pray? We're talking about when we pray for something, we're asking that divine energy be redirected in a different way. That's what we're asking for. That's what prayer is. We don't think it's just like magic. We're talking about a redirection of divine energy. And it's like, how do I get divine energy to go in a different direction? Well, if I put a lid on it here with my mouth, I, by definition, am keeping it in a certain place, and I'm not pushing the divine energy away. So we don't, just like when magnets are opposing forces, like where they have an opposite reaction, we don't want to push away the divine energy. We need as much of it as we can get. God willing, we'll have it. We'll have peace and calm in the land of Israel, the Jewish people, whether it's people in the Jewish people in France, the Jewish people in England, the Jewish people all over the world, that we will be able to have the divine energy come and bring more power and more strength to the cause of good in this world. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.